Okay, some of you just sitting down will know that just last weekend I was just finishing off a 9-day retreat in Penang, followed off by a talk at Singapore on Sunday evening, and then coming up here for the Monday evening party for New Year's Eve. Another talk on Tuesday. I'd worked out 13 talks in a row every evening, quite a few during the daytime as well. But I'm very happy to work my butt off, as they say. And tonight's talk, I'm going to recycle a talk which I was asked to give in Singapore last Sunday. It was a very wonderful title, it was a talk on gratitude. And by gratitude, I'm not going to just talk about gratitude to the people you like. I'm also going to talk about gratitude to the people you don't like, but even more than that, even gratitude to some of the things you don't like in this world. And how that gratitude can actually change the one's attitude to life, to make life more meaningful, a source of greater wisdom and growth, rather than always wallowing in the negativity of what I called a long time ago the fault-finding mind. It's as if these two are complete opposites, the fault-finding mind and gratitude. Whereas a fault-finding mind leads to ever negativity, depression, anger, guilt, and a terrible state of existence. A mind of the opposite of gratitude is seeing the good in things, in valuing things, in relishing even the difficult parts of life. It tends to lead one into growth and freedom and happiness and energy. So this is not just a talk on the ordinary concept of gratitude, but takes it to a much deeper level, and eventually how it is very powerful in our practice of meditation. Sometimes people think meditation is so hard. It's only because we approach meditation with unskillful attitudes. But when we understand just how to use our mind properly and encouraging this concept of gratitude, even when we're meditating, you find your meditation gets far easier and you get the peace, the energy, the power of your mind. So it's all about gratitude today. And of course, it's very easy to know, yeah, it should be gratitude to the people who help you and serve you in life, and that's obviously true. But you find that when you express that gratitude, it really has a lot of power, because even though people feel gratitude, very often we don't express it, and so it's a wasted opportunity. One of my favorite sayings is about gratitude or flattery. Flattery gets you everywhere. I know the saying was flattery gets you nowhere, but that is completely wrong. You try it out. Try flattering your partner, and you get far more traction from them. You kids, flatter your parents. Say, mother, father, oh, you're just wonderful parents. You know, I'm so lucky to have parents like you. I know that some other sort of parents are not so nice. But Mum, your cooking is great, Dad, you work so hard for me, I really, really love you. Now I can have an extra allowance. Or whatever it is, because flattery really works. When a person feels appreciated, there's far more opportunity for a conversation, for understanding each other. I don't know how many of you in your life at home feel you're not appreciated. You are appreciated, but just the other person never says so. Now, one of our monks, a couple of years ago, he spent only about a week in hospital for some procedure or another, and he was so impressed with the nurses and the doctors that he sent a letter to Jim McGuinty, who was the Minister of Health at the time. And you know what? He got a personal letter back. Jim McGuinty. You know how busy these ministers are. And the reason he got a personal letter, you know, handwritten, signed, you know, not by some sort of stamp or computer signature, a real letter from Jim McGuinty, who was the Minister of Health at the time, simply because it is so rare for anyone like McGuinty to get a letter of praise. Any politician for that matter. Every letter they get is always complaining about the waiting in the hospital, complaining about the services, complaining about this, complaining about that. He got a letter saying, thank you. And that was so rare, he wrote a letter back.
Now, the point is, you can see that what happens, if a little bit of kindness, a little bit of gratitude, it is so rare in our modern world that people actually, they listen to that, their eyes lighten up, the ears open up, and you've got some communication going. I know if people remember that gratitude word in their relationships, there'd be far less separation, far fewer divorces, and there'd be more out-of-work lawyers, which wouldn't be such a bad thing. And all it means is actually expressing something which you already have. So that's point number one. If you are grateful, flaunt it. Show it. Express it in whichever way possible. And you'll find you get a lot of instant reward. Because gratitude, we call it in Buddhism, good karma. It's one of the great good karmas. And if you make good karma, you get instant reward. Try that with your boss at work. Say, oh, you're such a great boss. You know, I'm so lucky to work with a boss like you. And then maybe you might get a raise. Or maybe they might say, oh, well, you know, seeing as you're so nice, here's some extra work. I don't know, but hopefully you get the raise instead. And usually you do, you get good karma back. But it's more interesting to use gratitude to some of the more difficult things we have to deal with in life. And sometimes even some of the difficult people you have to deal with in life. Now, how on earth can you be grateful to some of the people who are a pain in the neck? And it's quite obvious why, because these are what I learned in my early years as a monk. These are your main teachers. Which is why the old story, the first thing which I really hated when I became a monk in northeast Thailand, these were the jungles of Thailand, a long time ago, 35 years ago. And those mosquitoes were just so hard to endure. And when you ask your teacher, Ajahn Chah, can we have some mosquito repellent? No. Can we have some mosquito nets? No. Can we have some mosquito coils? No. These drive me crazy. Good. Are you torturing me? He said, no, we're teaching you that these mosquitoes, you're going to learn so much from these little insects. And that's why we learn to call mosquitoes Ajahn Mosquito, because Ajahn means teacher. These really are your main guides, Ajahn Mosquito. Now, we don't have mosquitoes in Western Australia. We have a few, but they're very rare. But you know, we have partners, because sometimes be very irritating. So if you're having a hard time with the person you live with, call them Ajahn.
Teacher.
Because you learn so much from them. And what you learn from these people is, you know, that one, life is not so easy, no matter where you go. And if you think, okay, I'm going to change my partner and get another one. Some of you have done that many times already. And one of the things which you should know is that they are all just the same. If you change your husband to get a different one, it's exactly the same engine inside. The exterior may be differently painted, but it's the same model inside. The same with wives, the same with other partners. Because they're human beings with their defilements, with their idiosyncrasies, with their own needs and desires and quirks, which are very rarely the same as you. So they become sort of our teachers. This is what we learn from. And I know that I remember reading about this guy when I was very young. When I grew up, there was very, very few spiritual teachers. But there was one guy who was a bit of an eccentric guru called Gurdjieff. And I remember reading about his history. Apparently, he had a sort of a center in France somewhere. And in his centers, like a communal, not really a monastery, but like a spiritual center where they had many residents could stay there. There was one fellow who was so irritating. And he was such a pain in the neck that the other people would meet together and say, can't we throw this person out? Sort of, you know, he never cleans up after him, he makes too much noise, you know, he eats all the best food. He's just really a pain. And he's so selfish. He's not spiritual at all. Can't we throw him out? And this Gurdjieff would not throw him out at all. Say, no, he stays. And it was only after this guy Gurdjieff died, when they went through the papers, they found out of all the residents, residents had to pay rent to stay there. But this guy was actually hired to stay there. This guy, Gurdjieff, paid him to stay there to irritate other people because he was the adjunct. It's very easy to be at peace and be compassionate and have loving kindness to the people you like. But the real spiritual test is actually, can you have a sense of tolerance, compassion and peace to the things which you don't like, especially the people you don't like? I remember when I told that in my monastery, that story, they thought, this monk over here, Ajahn Brahm, did you pay him to be here? Said, no, they're all here voluntarily. But you can see the reason why he was doing that, because sometimes in a spiritual community, everyone's very nice and happy, but they don't learn very much. And sometimes it's the difficult things in life is where we learn the most. And so it's a tough lesson. But when you actually learn how to deal with somebody else who is irritating, you can be at peace with them, then you've learned a great lesson. For those of you who haven't bought our New Year's calendar, there's a quote in there which says that, now why are you getting so angry and irritated about this person? It may be a person at work who gives you a hard time. You only have to be with them for maybe 8 hours of the day, only 5 days a week, but they have to be with themselves 24 hours a day for the rest of their life. Imagine what it must be like being with themselves as such a terrible person. And when you think like that, now you understand why. It's easy for me to be at peace with these people. You can tolerate them. And yet you can learn this wonderful tolerance, this peace, this compassion with these great teachers of yours. You can learn about the law of karma, because one of the quotes which didn't make it into the calendar, because it used an Australian expression, is one of the great Buddhist sayings, that why seek revenge? Why ever do you seek revenge for people who hurt you? Because you should know that karma will get the bastards anyway. That's an Australianism. But anyhow, it makes a lot of sense. It was edited out of the newsletter, out of the calendar. The point being is that what you're actually learning there, you're learning a little bit of forgiveness and understanding why people do these things. If you'd only knew the full story of why they are acting as they did, perhaps you'd have a bit more compassion. And having that person around, that irritation around, actually teaches you to look much deeper into why a person acts this way. And actually have a bit more forgiveness and tolerance. You learn so much. And maybe you also be able to understand why maybe you act that way. You learn so much from the irritations of life. But it's not just the people around you, because otherwise, what will we have to do in life? Otherwise, you always have to get rid of the people that irritate us. And that's what George Bush likes to do. Get rid of all the people that irritate him and stand in the way of whatever he wants to do. We call that pest control. I don't know how many pests you have, but sometimes you'd be very, very tempting. I've had something to spray them with to get them out of my hair. But pest control, it means the people you don't like or irritate you. So this is actually where we learn to be tested. And I know that sort of when, again, just remembering that when my teacher Ajahn Chah first went over to the West, he'd never been to a non-Buddhist country before. It's easy to be a monk in a country like Thailand or Burma or Sri Lanka, where people are nice to you. But the real test is when you go to sort of a Western country where people are really irritating to you. Or in this particular case, when he went on arms round in London, and this young man came up and threw punches at him. And this is a great monk. And there we go, but it's amazing, the punches were always designed just to miss. The kicks just went past. It wasn't the guy who was a bad shot. He was just trying to wind this guy up in the brown sort of, the brown bedsheet, just to find out what he was doing. And Ajahn Chah liked that so much, when he got back to Thailand, he said, I'm going to send all my monks over to England. It's a great place to see if they can sort of keep peaceful when they're tested so much. It was the irritations which test your mettle and find out where you're at, and also allow you to be more tolerant, more peaceful, more compassionate.
But even I remember when I went to sitting on the beach in Bunbury many years ago, and these kids started throwing stones at me. And I was testing my metal. Fortunately, they were bad shots and not one stone hit. Maybe it's my calm. Maybe the psychic force field for my meditation. I don't know. But the reason was, at that time, remember that Rajneesh fellow who was wanting to come to Perth? He'd been, I think he sent his secretary, Sheila, or whatever her name was, over, and she was in the news, and she said some really bad things, and people thought that I was an orange person. And so these kids, straight out of school, 13 or 14, said, get off our beach. And they started throwing stones. And I was meditating quite peacefully there. It's a great thing, I mean, to be able to sort of sit there when stones are whizzing past your ear. That's a test. But then again, I just, after a while, I realized that they'd make bad karma if they hit me. So out of compassion for them, I got up, but I didn't run away, I ran towards them, walked towards them. It's amazing when you confront people like that, of course they ran away. Except for one guy, and I said, oh, come over here, and I just said, look, I'm not a Rajneesh, I'm a Buddhist monk, this is what we do, very peaceful. I said, oh, sorry. And it was okay. But the point was that sometimes it's great if you're in a difficult situation, because that's where you really learn how to be peaceful. You get so much. If all you want in life is a comfortable life and a peaceful life and a rich life, you don't, okay, I mean, you're having a happy time, but you don't learn very much. And I always think that the purpose of life is actually becoming wiser, learning more, understanding more about the nature of yourself, the nature of other people, learning more about what this life is all about. Otherwise you have to come back again and another life and go through it all over again. It's a learning experience, life. And so sometimes the toughest teachers are where we learn the most. But of course it's not just people, it's situations which we're put in from time to time. And of course one of those situations which is getting more and more common these days is when people get things like illnesses, cancers, diseases. And of course that's, again, one of our great teachers. We call them Ajahn Cancer. Because you learn so much from this. And of course, because meditation is so well known to be of great help to diseases like cancers, which are mostly stress caused, or at least stress supported, that people very often come to Buddhist monks like me to get counseling or to learn some meditation, but not only that, to get what we call these days cognitive therapy, this big wonderful word which just means changing their attitude to these things. I don't know how many people have been going to these cancer support associations and teaching for such a long time now. I don't know how many people have come up to me and said, that was the best thing which ever happened to me, the cancer. And I'm not just making this up. I've never had cancer, not in this lifetime anyway. But this is what people keep on saying. And the reason they say that, yeah, it was a tough experience, but they learned so much that in retrospect, they were actually grateful for their cancer. They can understand how this gratitude is actually going in a completely deeper way than you may have ever expected. They were grateful for that because they learned much more about what was really important to them in life. When life is just going along easily, we forget what is really valuable in life. I don't know how many of you are worrying about your mortgages or the increase in sort of bank rates or about global warming or about, these are important issues, but there's also your family, you know, your own sort of peace of mind. You know, there's many other important issues other than these worldly issues outside. Now, the relationship issues you have, because most people, when they think about what's most important to them in life, what is most important to you in life? Why can't we keep remembering that? Sometimes you need a cancer or a sort of death in the family or some other tragedy to remind you of what really is important. Which is why these things are great teachers to us. And you know, you learn much more from some of these tragedies in life than you ever learn by reading a book or coming to a place like this. Because it just reminds you about what life is really all about. Every time that somebody dies in your family. And what amazing teaching that is. That's why in traditional Buddhism we say the three great teachers are old age, sickness and death. For which we should be grateful. Because they remind us, you know, that we're in this planet for such a small time. And that we're subject to sickness. We're subject to death. And so for these things, we can actually be grateful. How can you be grateful for sickness? One thing is that without sickness there would be no real need for compassion and kindness. And one of the most wonderful things to see is people looking after other people who are sick or other people who are old. And sometimes it really brings tears to your eyes actually to see the care and kindness which people can bring up. Now when you are hurting and in pain, how people will stop what they're doing to get you to the hospital, will comfort you. And how when you're in that hospital, some people, friends you didn't even realize were there, would come along and visit you and make sure you're okay. Which is why that sometimes people, when they go to hospital, they say, please don't tell anyone I've been in hospital, I get too many people to visit me. A lot of times you like being visited, not because you need to actually to be helped or want to talk to people, just the fact that people are kind and they're manifesting that kindness. That's why I tell these days, if you are sick, don't feel guilty about being sick or feel like you're a burden for others. As far as the Buddhist teachings are concerned, if you are sick, it's a wonderful gift you're giving to other people. In other words, you're saying to other people, I need you. And you're giving other people an opportunity to serve and help and show their kindness to you. So it's not your sickness. Your sickness is part of the relationship you have with your loved one, with your friends. And it's a time and opportunity where we can really go out of our way to help and serve each other. Without those sicknesses, sometimes there's not the need to help. That's why sometimes we should be grateful for sickness, because it brings our communities, especially your close communities, together. Whereas other times you'd be neglected and we all go our separate ways. Sometimes in sickness when we really show our kindness, compassion, our care for one another. Other times we take each other for granted, which is again one of the opposites of being grateful. And so that when sickness comes or when death comes, you know, when a death comes in our family, it just shows us how grateful we should be for the people who are left behind, the time we have with each other, so we don't waste it with silly things like arguments and feuds. And I mention this because it's New Year, just past Christmas, and I still recall, after being 9 years over in Thailand, and just hearing all these wonderful, amazing, compassionate, letting go, forgiving teachings, and then going to visit my family for the first time in so many years, and seeing the reunion, and seeing what life was really like, not in a monastery, but in sort of a family. I always remember this, when we met each other, oh, happy Christmas, how have you been? It lasted about 5 minutes. Well, maybe a bit longer, maybe 15 minutes. And then they started the arguments, the family feuds came out, about who didn't do what, or said what. Within half an hour, everyone was arguing with each other. So much for family love. I don't know if that happens in your families, people always arguing with each other and having family feuds. When I saw that, I think, gee, why is it that we do such a things when we're only going to be with each other for a short time? Can't we let all that stuff go? It happened years ago. And instead, just be grateful that we have this family members, we common, we grew up together. Sure, we made mistakes. Can't we be grateful for the beautiful times we had together? And then we can actually be grateful. And with gratitude, instead of having the fault-finding mind, we can have the appreciative mind, because these people aren't going to be around for that long time. And certainly when we do have that funeral service, we never actually bring up all the pain of the past and the bad of the past and the faults of the past. In all funeral services, we always are grateful. We remember the beautiful times we had together. And sometimes even people have been arguing with each other. Sometimes when they're dead, they realize just how they've wasted so many opportunities. And how they've wasted gratefulness and gratitude. They should have been kinder. I still remember this old lady. She was a Thai Chinese who married a Chinese Chinese. Would always come every weekend to offer food to the monks. And she was just, I used to call her when I was young, women like that, battle axes. She was always shouting at her husband, George, come and do this, George, come and do that, George, George. And I felt so sorry for this poor man. But then she died and we did her funeral service. And I always thought that George would be so happy now his wife was dead. Well, if anyone should be happy, he should be. Because she gave him such a hard time. And that was in public. I don't know what she did in private. It must have been even worse. remember afterwards he came up to me and he said with tears, and I miss her so much. And it was just so sweet and lovely that sometimes even people who gave you a hard time, actually you miss when they're dead. So you should be so grateful that someone's there at least to order you around to tell you what to do. You miss them afterwards. So sometimes the death teaches us the importance of being grateful. We're not going to be here for all that long. So be grateful for the people around. Now what the real underlying idea of gratitude is, we can look at a person, we can look at a sickness, we can look at a situation, we can look at it two ways. See all the things which are wrong in it, and that makes us angry, fault-finding, negative, depressed and upset. So you can look at your partner and see all the things wrong with it. You can look at your body and see all the mistakes and things wrong with it. You can look upon life and see all the things wrong with it, which means you're not grateful. You're finding fault with it. The gratitude says, thank goodness, even if it's bad, that's a teacher to me. I can see something important and beautiful in it. My partner, yeah, they may not be the best, but they're good enough. You know, at least they're a friend which I can argue with. At least got someone to talk to. But usually they don't always argue. You have some wonderful times together as well. But why is it we always remember the arguments and the mistakes? And we've got sort of life, you know, sometimes our sickness and bodies. So that when we have the fault-finding mind, this makes us negative. And when we get negative, we get depressed. When we get depressed, we lose all our energy. And actually, because we get into this cycle of negativity, fault-finding, you know, we get into negativity, it's a habit we have. We start finding negativity everywhere. We find fault with everything. And when you start to think of, you know, where you're living, now, do you find fault with your government? Well, this is Australia, it's not sort of Zimbabwe or Iraq. You should be so grateful we live in a sort of a peaceful, kind country. Sure, it's not the best government, but, you know, it could be heaps worse. And same with your partner, it could be heaps worse. The climate could be heaps worse. So sometimes that fault-finding mind, you see so much negative, you can't even stay in paradise. Even up in heaven. Just harp music. That's what they're supposed to, that's what I was told they play in heaven. Harp music. Who wants to listen to harp? I like electric guitar, I don't know about you. And apparently, if you read the books, you know, in heaven, it's only, you only get Western food, because the Western foods, the Westerners wrote the books. So if you're Asian, no curries, no noodles, you have a rough time up there. So sometimes we can be so fault-finding, even in paradise we can find fault with it. And are you in paradise already? So it's an interesting thing to ask. And you're just finding fault with it and you make a hell on earth. So the gratitude is the opposite. When you see gratitude, you get into looking for the beauty. Not you're neglecting the faults in life, but by looking at the beauty, looking at the positive side of things, looking at even the hard, painful times as teachers, you're getting this incredible positive attitude to the things you have to deal with in life. You can't avoid the sicknesses, you can't avoid, you know, governments, you can't avoid taxes, you can't avoid sort of too hot and too cold, you can't avoid sort of having partners which irritate you. Even some monks irritate me in a monastery, but you know, that's part of life. I know that that's much easier than having a wife, so I cop it sweet. Well, it's true. Or a husband. Sorry, that one slipped out. But I'm so grateful just to be able to live like this. So when you have that positive attitude to what you have to deal with in life, when you stop complaining, why is it that in all these places, you know, we have like complaints boxes? Have you got a complaints box? Or why don't we have a gratitude box at work as well? Not just complaints, but praise. Because people are just not used to doing things like that. We have that, the praise box as well as the complaints box. Now you actually find that it brings up a much better attitude to life. Because when it brings up that attitude to life, when we actually look at the things which are really worthy and sort of focused on those with gratitude, you find that because you have such positive energy and positive way of looking at life, not only does it bring you more mental energy up in your life, you tend to see more goodness in life. You have these like two cycles. Once you get depressed, you get very critical, and you get sort of more negative, and it just builds upon itself like a fire which never stops. Once you get negative, you lose all your energy. Because you lose all your energy, you can never see anything bright and beautiful, and you get more depressed. And you get in this cycle, this spiral, downward and downward and downward of depression, and negativity, and anger, and even guilt. You know, because guilt is just anger at yourself, negativity towards, you know, your own life so far. And of course, we all know that sort of type of mind. And it's a very unpleasant place to live in. That is the hell which you make. But with gratitude, when we start to feel thankful for, you know, who we are, for our partners, for our friends, for our government, for our climate, just gratitude for being here. Then that brings up a sense of positivity, which brings more energy into the mind. You begin to see more beauty in life, which means you do get even more energy. And you get into this upward spiral, which makes a heaven. Right now, here in this very life, when you see that, you cultivate that gratitude, then whatever happens to you in life, you know, if it is a sickness, even a disappointment, something goes wrong, instead of getting upset and angry, great, another learning experience for me, something else to make me stronger, something else which I can learn from. So I'm grateful for these experiences of life, which are sometimes tough and difficult, because without those experiences, I wouldn't be who I was. So now I'm grateful for those wonderful mosquitoes. And one of the things they taught me was how to meditate. For those of you who are meditating just now, half an hour ago, and you were trying to watch the breath, and you're wandering around to this, wandering around to the cricket, to the football, to the what you're going to do afterwards, or whatever else happened today for you. When I was meditating in Thailand with these damn mosquitoes, so every time my mind would wander off from the breath, they wouldn't go thinking about, you know, tomorrow or yesterday. Straight away they'd wander onto these blooming mosquitoes who were eating me to death. And so the only escape which I had from that great irritation was to really focus on the breath, because when you focus on one thing, you can't feel anything else. As I focused so much onto the breath, I really kept my mind fixed on it. My attention was solid on the breath, without wavering, because if it did waver, it would go to my arms and my head and every other exposed part of my body, which was so hard to bear. So those mosquitoes really taught me how to focus my attention. And so I'm very grateful for those mosquitoes. I learned a lot from them. Sometimes the sicknesses which you have, you really appreciate your health. I don't know how often that you abuse your body. It's because you think that your health is a birthright and it's your nature. If you get sick a few times, you're so grateful for health, you really look after it, you care for it, you value it, because that's what gratitude is, valuing what's really worthy of value and not ignoring it or taking it for granted. And sometimes the pain and difficulties teach you how to value things. When you do experience, you know, the death of a loved one, you know, you realize that something which you thought was always going to be there for you is now no longer there. You wake up in the morning and something's missing in your home. It's your dead one. It really teaches you how we should be grateful and really put enormous value, much higher value than you ordinarily do, on the people you care for and the people who care for you. That's the lesson which death gives you. It's a great teaching. And without that teaching, we would become very heedless and take our loved ones, the people who care for us, our family and friends, too much for granted. So the gratitude puts greater value on things which are really worthy of value. And even like grateful for, you know, people who serve us for the police and the... Even the police, it's great if you ever go up to a policeman and say, look, I really appreciate the job you're doing, thank you. Because very few policemen get that. And that's why many policemen, although there's any police in the police service here, there's quite a few Buddhist policemen. And when I actually see them, they say, look, you do a really great job, it's not the easiest job in the world, but really thank you. And then it becomes so friendly, at last someone actually says thank you to us instead of us running away whenever, you know, we approach them. And then they let you off the speeding fines. Nah. But it's amazing what you can do with a bit of gratitude. When you value people in life, then when you value them, they actually come back to you and they give you some positive feedback back. And when you have that gratitude and value, it brings up this greater energy inside of you. And it also means that you begin to see a happier side to life. You value what really needs to be valued. And that actually also goes in just your general attitudes in life. What is really important in life is what you value. And instead of focusing on the faults, when you focus on what's really valuable, I call that watering the flowers instead of watering the weeds. And there's two ways of getting rid of the weeds in your garden. One is pulling them out, but the other one is neglecting the weeds and just watering the flowers. And when you just water the flowers, it's the flowers which grow and choke the weeds. When they get all the nutriment and the water and the food, of course they will grow strong and they will choke the weeds. In that simile, this is what we really mean by learning how to develop happy, positive, great states of mind. By watering them. By focusing on them. Every psychologist knows that you do learn much more from the successes than you ever learn from your faults and mistakes. But why is it we always focus on the faults and mistakes of life? So instead we can actually really value sort of what worked in our life, the happy moments in life, and focus on them, be grateful for them. And with that extra value of watering the flowers, of course the flowers grow and then we have a beautiful garden. That's our life, that's who we are. And that bit of gratitude even helps you, you know, for those of you who practice your meditation, because too often that is, people don't get peaceful in meditation because, again, too thoughtful, they haven't got enough gratitude. What gratitude, again, means is whenever you're sitting, you just be grateful to be able to sit here and to be able to give this moment a bit of peace of mind. At least you've got half an hour when you can meditate. You've got a place where you can meditate. Sure, it may not be the best, but it's good enough. And that actually good enough, which is another expression of gratitude and valuing whatever you're experiencing, is a reason why you don't get so restless. I don't know how many of you think too much. Why are you thinking too much? Because you always want something more. You're not grateful for what you have here in this moment. You want to get something more. I was telling people today that I don't know how many people have bought a lottery ticket in the last month. You should be so grateful that you haven't won. Because actually winning the lottery is a big pain. So whatever it is, be grateful what you have. This is good enough for me. Now if you can do that with meditation, that gratitude in this moment gives you what we call contentment. And contentment is a great secret of happiness. How much do you need to be really happy in life? Now, certainly if you look back to 1500 years, you can see just people lived in much smaller places than we live today. They didn't have so many clothes and shoes to wear or so much choice of food. They could be pretty happy. So how much do you need to be happy? Sure, it's okay if you can manage to get more, fine, but it's not necessary. So to be grateful for what you have. And when we're grateful for what we have, what we really mean, what we're really saying is we learn how to be content with what we have. Imagine you're content with the person you live with. That makes it a much easier life. You're content with the job you have. You're content with the body you have. Not the best body, but it's good enough. The most beautiful, but it's good enough. When you actually have this good enough attitude, this contentment, you tend to appreciate these things. And there's such a lack of appreciation for anything these days. Actually, not these days, but every person who's had fault-finding mind. But when we actually have some appreciation, we have this sense that this is good enough, then we can actually use that in our practice of meditation. We sit here, close our eyes, we appreciate this moment. Therefore, we can actually stay here. We don't need to think so much and have a restless mind. Very often I sort of describe life, if you want to know what life is. It's just always moving on to something else, always going on to the next thing, never being here. Throughout your whole life, how long have you really been here in life? Or have you always been moving on to something else, the next thing? Well, of course, many people, when they get 50, 60, 70, they realize they've just been always on the move. They never stop to appreciate, you know, the moment. Always going somewhere, doing something, changing something, making something happen. No wonder people get sort of stressed out and haven't got a clue of how to be happy. But with a sense of gratitude, when we're content, this is good enough for me, this moment, then actually you can rest, you can appreciate, you can stop. And that's so important. That's why, you know, I say this almost every week. You know, when you go home and you see how many dishes are in the sink, be grateful for how many dishes are cleaned. And that that means you don't have to worry about all the ones dirty in the sink. In other words, this is good enough for tonight, I'll do it tomorrow. Give yourself a break. So that way, when you learn how to be a little bit content, you learn how to be still and don't do so much in this world. Because we're compulsive doers. We do so much. We create this frantic energy in the world. And this frantic energy always coming and going. Creating so much unnecessary work and rush. Have you ever wanted just actually to slow down? Have a more peaceful life? A more sane life? And what do people do? They say, yeah, I will slow down. I will be more sane. Once I get all these things out of the way, once I get it all settled, once I get it all fixed up, then I'll slow down. And of course, that's a big mistake in life, because the only time you slow down then is when you reach the coffin. For many people, that's the only time they stop. You know, when they're in the box, it's too late. So stop beforehand. Learn how to be peaceful. Have a bit of contentment right now. And the only way you can do that by cultivating a sense of gratitude and valuing little things. Valuing the moment, valuing being here, being so grateful to be in this moment. And for some people who have difficulty meditating, we give them that as almost like a mantra. Words where they say to themselves over and over and over again, this is good enough, this is good enough, this is good enough. It's a powerful mantra to use, because when you say this is good enough, at first you think, of course it's not good enough. What's he talking about? There's things to be done, I'm not good enough. After a while you find, yes, you are good enough, because the final part of gratitude, which really gives you peace and stillness, is being grateful for who you are. And stop this terrible fault finding towards yourself. Are you grateful for who you are, or are you still trying to fix yourself up? Sometimes we look upon ourselves and all we can see is all the things which are wrong, all our faults, all the stuff we shouldn't have done which we did do, all the stuff which we should have done but we sort of neglected to do. It's that fault finders when it comes to ourselves. And of course you know what it's like, because that's describing many of you, what it's like to live with yourself when you've got that sort of attitude. You can never be at peace with yourself because you don't like yourself. A bit of gratitude to yourself, in the same way you're grateful to your parents. Now, thank you so much. I know it was hard to do. Maybe you didn't do the best job, but that's thank you for at least feeding me and sending me to school. Can you be that same gratitude towards yourself? A sense of thankfulness for who you are? Say, thank you, me. May not be the best monk, but good enough. If you do something like that, you find you get a sense of peace, and it changes the whole attitude. You start to value yourself, instead of always wanting to destroy yourself, or take parts of you apart. And maybe the biggest problem in Western society is that sense of self-destruction. People destroy themselves and do violence to themselves in many ways, not just through drugs and alcohol, but by work. Sometimes, you know, we run away from ourselves by making ourselves so incredibly busy. We stress ourselves out, and when we do get sick, sometimes people think they deserve it. It's like self-harm. The reason we get self-harm in our societies through overwork, or through drinking drugs or other addictions, often is because we're running away from a person we don't like. We don't value. That's why whatever we don't value, of course, that's why we want to destroy it. So if you really value yourself and are grateful for, you know, who you are, you're good enough. That's why one of the teachers, a monk who took over from Ajahn Chah, he once pointed, look at all the trees in the forest. Now, there's not one tree in the forest which is perfectly straight, with all its limbs and branches all in the right place, which hasn't got a sort of a leaf which isn't sort of brown or sort of curled and dead. It's the nature of trees in the forest. Just go out into a natural forest and look, they're all over the place. Some leaning this way, some leaning that way, some with sort of parasites on. He said, that's the nature of the forest, and the forest looks beautiful like that. You compare a natural forest with one which is planted by plantation. When you go into a plantation, all the trees are in rows and in lines. It's not natural. They're perfect. in one sense, but it doesn't have any sort of warmth to it. Once he taught me that, I realized that how to look at forests and to see that all the gnarled dead trees, you know, all the ones leaning over, all the ones which are stunted, they also have a place in the forest. Without them, the forest would not look as beautiful. And then I look at all of you, all the ones which are old and leaning over, all the ones which are stunted, which have parasites, gnarled and ugly. You know, without you, the world would be so beautiful. You've got your place as well. And that's actually the teaching of a forest, to appreciate every shrub, every tree, even the dead logs on the forest floor have a role to play as places where the animals can hide and even live and set up their nests. Every part of the forest, even what I thought was ugly, now I could see is valuable. And that's why you see everybody in this world is valuable. There's no person I've ever seen, and I've seen some rapists and murderers and terrible people when I visit prisons. I see even them. You're valuable too. You're part of the forest. And I'm grateful for you being there. And imagine what a rapist feels like when a monk comes up and says, I'm grateful for you being who you are. Imagine the change which they see there. They get stunned by little attitudes like that. What do you mean, someone admires me for being a rapist? No, not for being a rapist, but for being you. Seeing the bigger picture. And when you admire, respect, value somebody like that, they tend to value themselves. And when they value themselves, the very reason why they did those terrible crimes is taken away. So they actually, naturally, they don't want to do such things ever again. They don't want to hurt themselves, and that's a lot of time hurting other people is just another way of hurting themselves. So when we value every tree, every shrub, every broken tree in the forest, we can value every person, every broken person in our world. And then we can value ourselves, and every broken part, every deformed, stunted part of who we think we are. Yeah, all of that also belongs in us. We're grateful for everything in our history, which made us who we were, who we are now. And with that sense of gratitude, we don't want to destroy anything. When we don't want to destroy anything, we value it. When we value it, that is becoming to be at peace with it. That's what we mean by compassion and kindness. It's great tolerance. It's opening the door of your heart to who you are, to your whole history, and making peace with yourself. And by making peace with yourself, having gratitude for your past, is that's what you learn from. Not making it as if it's some sort of flaw in your character, but it's part of who you are. Incorporating it, allowing it to grow. It's also called being grateful for the shit which is dropped on you in life. Because when the shit is dropped on you, that becomes your fertilizer for which you grow. These are all the great stories, instead of just worrying about these things. Like that old story of, I don't know when the last time I told this, about the donkey in the well. Donkey was walking along, fell in the well one day. And when he fell in the well, it was a dry well, so he wasn't killed. He didn't sort of break any legs, but there was a donkey in the bottom of the well. He couldn't climb out. And there's no one else around, so the donkey had to cry out. And he made a loud noise, but no one heard him. So he cried out again, I can't do donkey noises. So I usually go, ah, 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 said the donkey, and no one heard him. Ah, ah, louder, no one heard him. Eventually a farmer heard him. But it was a bad farmer. A very cruel man. He never liked that donkey. And now he saw the donkey in the bottom of the well. And he also knew that was a dangerous well. You know, he could fall in it one day. Or some of his friends. So he thought he would decide to kill two birds with one stone, which is not a good Buddhist saying. So usually we say to cut two carrots with one knife. It's a Buddhist. I think I said that last week, didn't I? 2 weeks ago. Anyway, to cut two carrots with one knife. So he decided to fill in the well and also kill the donkey at the same time. So he started shoveling soil over the donkey. And of course, the donkey had no means of escape. He was being buried alive. And the poor donkey, ah, even louder. It made a terrible noise as shovel after shovel of dirt was being thrown all over him. And after a short while, the donkey became quiet. Farmer thought he killed the donkey, but he hadn't. the donkey had finally learned gratitude and wisdom. What the farmer never saw, he was busy shoveling dirt. Every shovelful of dirt which hit the donkey's back, the donkey would just shrug it off, stamp it in underneath him, and he would grow half a centimeter higher. Another shovelful of earth, shrug it off, stamp it in, another half a centimeter closer to the top of the well. That's why he never made any noise. He didn't want to let the farmer know what he was doing. And the farmer kept on shoveling and shoveling, another shovelful, shrug it off, stamp it in, closer to escape. The farmer never noticed a pair of ears appear on the top of the well. He did notice a head appear. And he was so busy shuffling. When the donkey got close enough, because another shovelful, shrug it off, stamp it in, the donkey could actually jump out of the well. And according to the story, he bit the farmer on the backside, just to prove the law of karma works, and ran off. And the moral of that story is, many of you know, that if people shovel dirt over you in life, which they do sometimes, they abuse you, they criticize you, if you get a shovel full of dirt over your back, don't complain, but be grateful. Shrug it off, stamp it in, and you're half a centimeter higher. There are little stories like that just actually show you that how we deal with the difficulties of life. Not with negativity and say, why does it happen to me? But a sense of gratitude. And then we can learn to use everything in life. You have this wonderful attitude. You actually get to be at peace with life and use everything in life. And we're grateful for every tree in the forest. Sometimes I always thought the dead trees in the forest needed to be chainsawed out. They looked ugly. First time going to Serpentine 25 years ago, that's what I wanted to do. Take all the dead trees out, and they could have died back, to make it a healthy looking forest, until someone said, no, that's where all the animals, things like the possums, live. Now I realize even those ugly trees, I thought they were ugly, now I know they're so beautiful and valuable. Just the same with life. Many of the things I thought were ugly in life, now I realize they're beautiful and valuable. I'm grateful for those dead trees in the forest where our monastery is. And I'm grateful for the difficult times of my life. I'm grateful for the pain which sometimes you feel. It tells you to be actually more careful of your body. And I'm grateful for all the people, even the people who sometimes are hard to deal with. So that way that you can learn how to be grateful to life. You can't fight life, you can't beat life. Have you ever heard the saying, if you can't beat them, join them? You can't beat life. Join life. If you can't beat yourself, join yourself. Instead of being divided against yourself, learn how to be one. With a sense of gratitude to everything which life throws at you. So that's what gratitude means. It gives you enormous peace, wisdom, even enlightenment. Which is why the Buddha praised gratitude so much. That's a little talk this evening. Great start to 2008. Being grateful for who you are and all the people who inhabit our world. Thank you so much.
Arahaṁ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṁ bhagavantaṁ abhivādhe. Savakato bhagavata dhammo dhammam namassami. Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho sanghaṁ namāmi.